Welcome to another episode of Fresh Out of Tokens Podcast. This is Tanya, also known as Cypher Tier, all over the internet. And tonight I've got not just a guest, but a guest host. You've seen a lot of Tim's questions when we do episodes. So I actually finally got the chance to do an episode with him. So say hello, Tim.
Hi, everybody. I'm really excited to finally be recording with Tanya.
Instead of like recording and then I get to hear it much later. It warms my BioWare fangirl heart.
Oh,
it does. Well, I'm a big BioWare nerd. To welcome BioFan to the show, so say hello.
Hey, everyone. BioFan here.
Welcome. So, for those listening, we are part of the Geek.fm network, along with Geeks and Sneaks, Chromatic Life, and More Than Bits podcasts. We have teas and other items in the I Need Diverse Games spreadsheet shop. There's also a blog to complement the show, which is now outoftokenscast.com. We dropped the WordPress, so yay for not a terribly long URL.
And yay, simple URL!
Yes. You know, it was worth the $18 to give to WordPress to drop the WordPress out of our URL. And then if you have questions, compliments, hate mail, please don't actually send us hate mail. I get enough of that on my personal account. You can email us at freshoutoftokens@gmail.com or add us on Twitter, outoftokenscast. So with that whole spiel out of the way, we can get to questions.
Whew!
Feel free to cuss, be yourself.
Okay, cool.
So for those people who may not know who you are or not like hardcore into BioWare fandom like the three of us, you know, give people a little bit of who you are and what it is you do.
Who am I? Okay. I guess the simplest explanation would be I'm a YouTuber. I do coverage of BioWare game development. I interview voice actors and developers. I do kind of trailer analysis videos. I'm all over the internet. I'm on YouTube and Twitter and Tumblr and Reddit, and pretty much if there's an internet outlet for me to be, I'm pretty much there. But primarily I'm known for my YouTube videos. So if you do not know who I am at all, feel free to check out my channel. If you just type like BioWare, or no, sorry, I guess you can find me if you type in BioWare, but if you type in BioFan just on YouTube, you'll find me. I'm pretty easy to find.
Very cool.
All right. And one of the usual questions, what got you into gaming?
Oh, gosh. I started playing video games. Ooh, how young was I? Oh, gosh. Well, let me just put it this way. My first video game was Elmo's ABCs for the Game Boy Color. So I've been playing video games for pretty much as long as I can remember. I really got into kind of hardcore gaming probably when I was around like 13, 14, 15, 16, somewhere in the teen years, when there was this magical day that I walked into GameStop. I was looking through kind of the video games that weren't brand new, so kind of like the discount-ish area, and I was looking around, and I was like, what's this game? Dragon Age Origins. This looks interesting. I'll try this out. It's got some interesting stuff on the back of this box here. You know, killing stuff and blood and dragons and medieval stuff and magic. Okay, I'll try that. That's my impression medieval of 16-year-old stuff. Me. I don't know. So when I started playing Dragon Age Origins, that really got me into BioWare stuff. And just, oh, man, it's so good. Oh, so good.
Neat. Although I'm having that kind of, oh, God, I feel so old right now moment.
I'm 21, so I tend to do that to a lot of the fandom. They're like, oh, I've been playing video games for like this many X times 10 years. And I'm like, I've been playing video games for like, I don't know, 10 maybe.
You're like half of my life.
my first BioWare was KOTOR, and I was in college at that point. So
yeah, I'm definitely having the, oh, wow, I am old fandom mom moment. but for being just 21, you've done so much with the fandom, you know, and thus your online handle. So
aww, I was
wondering,
thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. And I was just wondering, like, kind of how did that get started? Because, like, you have the handle BioFan Official, which is kind of neat, but it makes you wonder, it's like, did someone co-sign on that at BioWare? Is it just like, no, this is my brand?
I'm technically not affiliated with BioWare. I'm technically freelance.
Mm-hmm.
But the way I kind of got started was after playing Dragon Age Origins, I was like, this is the best thing that ever happened. So at that time, I think Dragon Age 2 was in development by the time I finished Origins. That or there was DLC or something, so I was involved with kind of following when that was happened. And I discovered this little place, this little corner of the internet called the Bioware Forums, or BSN, as a lot of people call it. And I kind of camped out there for several years, just kind of absorbing the knowledge and following development of games and all that. And then I made friends with this one other user who is also a YouTuber. Her name is Ability Drain, so shout out there. And she did YouTube videos and stuff. And I was good friends with her for a long, long time. And she kind of helped me get started doing videos. I was like, I don't know. I really like Bioware stuff. These video things seem kind of cool. Maybe I should give it a try. And so I tried it. And my first video was like a reaction video to like an Inquisition trailer or something. But from there, I did kind of like trailer analysis and breakdown and news updates. And when I originally got started, not a lot of people know this because this was my like early days back, what I like to call the dark ages before I produced really good quality videos. I was known as DA fan, and I decided to, like Dragon Age DA, mm-hmm. you know, but I decided to change it for a couple of reasons. First was I was going to branch out into other Bioware games. And having followed the development of Bioware, I knew a lot about Bioware. I knew where to get my information, all of that. So I kind of was, I'm comfortable kind of just sticking with Bioware for now. And but I wanted to change my name because I was going into Mass Effect. So just DA fan was kind of didn't really help out a lot. And so then I also this is a fun story. So if you type in DA fan on YouTube, for some reason, there's something in Asian, maybe more kind of Indian pop culture called Dafan. And for some reason, that when you search DA fan, that's all you get is like music videos from India. So I was like, this is not going to help me out very much. I'm not really going to make my name for myself with this. So I decided to change my name. I was like, God, what do I change it to? And then I was like, well, BioWare, BioFan, you know, kind of has a good sort of ring to it. Kind of tells you immediately what I'm about, tells companies and BioWare itself kind of what I'm about. And you know, and it worked. And no one else really had it. And the only reason that I have the official at the end of some of my websites is just regular old BioFan is actually taken on some things. And, this is really funny. So my name BioFan is also the name of a odorless brand of European coconut oil. The name of a Russian line of pet products, and the name of a Japanese water filtering fan thing that people put in ponds.
Okay, so, then.
Yeah, I know, like the most random things you could possibly think of. But yeah, that's kind of how I got started and my name and all that.
Huh, that's like totally random.
I know, right?
You should get those products and do a review just for fun.
I really should get those products and make a video about it and be like, so guys, I tried out me.
That would be too funny.
Reviewing your personal brand.
Reviewing my personal brand.
Literally.
Like, I mean, but the like odorless coconut oil. Like, who does that?
If you have a scent sensitivity.
I mean, I guess, but out of all the things that could have been BioFan, I find that very funny.
That's fair.
So you've had a chance to interview a lot of folks at BioWare and people who've worked on the games as well, including the voice actors and actresses. What has been your favorite interview so far that you've done?
Oh gosh, how do you even begin to answer this question? I mean, they've all like. Everyone I've interviewed, every voice actor, every developer, they're just awesome people. And I don't know how to choose. I mean, I guess I'll just kind of talk about a few of them. I mean, for example, like, I feel very lucky to count Allegra Clark, the voice of Josephine, as a friend of mine. And she is just amazing and hilarious, and we had a great time. Alex Wilton-Regan, I can't even begin to, like, there's not enough positive adjectives in the English language to describe Alex Wilton Regan. Just, oh my gosh. And Mika Simmons, my first interview, I was so nervous because it was the first time I was ever interviewing someone officially. Like, I studied the interview styles of, like, Barbara Walters and Katie Couric and tried kind of do my homework. And I was so nervous. I was like, oh my God, I'm interviewing the voice of Queen Inora. Oh my God. And she's so sweet and just so nice. And And I've interviewed developers. I've interviewed Jordan Koch and Courtney Woods that work at BioWare Austin. I also live in Austin, so it was just a quick pop drive over up there. And they're, oh, so nice. And they are just as passionate about the games as we are. It is crazy how much that, like, we love what they do and they love what they do. And that really kind of shows in what they produce. And they worked on the Descent DLC, so that's what I interviewed them about. I got invited up to BioWare and I was just so excited. It was one of the best days. It was the best Monday that I can specifically say was a Monday. Let's just put it that way.
That's awesome. I so would love to visit. I would like to visit Montreal or Edmonton studio because it's a chance to get out of the U.S.
Yes.
One. And two, I really just want to hang out with, like, Karen Weeks and, like, go get a beer with her.
Karen Weeks is just, oh, she's so sweet. She's such a sweetheart.
She is. We've not yet had a chance to meet. Patrick is going to be at GDC. I don't know if Karen is coming too. Because I thought they were both coming to GamerX, but they did not, sadly, so.
Not this year. Hopefully next year. When they get closer to game releases, I'm sure they'll be very present at conventions.
Yeah. I'm just trying to think of, like, the cool BioWare folks I would like to meet. Like, hope I will probably fangirl and embarrass myself whenever I get to meet John Epler at GDC. So, John, if you hear this, I am not a weirdo, I swear.
She's giving you fair warning.
And he's just such a sweet person. He's on the list of people I want to go hang out with, go get a drink, and just, like, chat about stuff. Not even just BioWare stuff.
Just stuff. Just the regular stuff.
Basically, it's like, dude, I, like, want to buy you a beer and chat about, like, every, like, gaming nerdery that has nothing to do with your job. So to the meat of our podcast is, you know, and it's not just BioWare stuff, even though I manage most episodes to get in some kind of BioWare reference.
BioWare's like that. It always sneaks in somewhere. I know. Anywhere it can. It's kind of like, I'm trying to think of an analogy, but it's not really coming to mind. But you know what I mean. Like, yeah. It'll sneak in anywhere it can. And it's lovely.
It's insidious.
Beautifully insidious.
It is. So, you know, our podcast is about diversity. It's about inclusion and feminism and intersectionality. You know, someone who's so deeply involved in the fandom, I was wondering, what are your thoughts about the diversity issues in BioWare titles?
Well, I think there's always room for improvement, but I think kind of the first thing you need to kind of look at is you need to go back to, like, their early days and see that it has improved. We have more characters of varying sexualities, of varying gender, of varying skin tone, varying accent even. And it is getting better, but I would say, like, one area that I would personally really like to see is, if you think of the Mass Effect trilogy, we've actually never had a fully gay male squad mate ever in Mass Effect.
What
so
about
that's one thing.
Well, Steve Cortez doesn't come with you.
Yeah, he's not a squad mate, and I have a lot of feelings about Cortez. I'll get to that in a moment, but
oh dear.
I have some feelings about Cortez. But so that's one thing I'd like to see. In Mass Effect, let's not to talk necessarily bad about not including, because they've been very, very, very friendly to the gay community at BioWare. Like, a lot of the gamers that I know are, like, super into BioWare, because not a lot of game companies will let you actually play as yourself. Like, I remember growing up and just always defaulting to playing a female character because I had no other option if I wanted to romance a dude. So it's nice that now I'm actually, like, I can play as myself. So I also took to play as female characters as well, just to, you know, mix it up after my first playthrough. And it's really great to even have that option. So, you know, you have to kind of sit back and be like, well, I don't have this. You do also have to realize at the same time, like, they've done all of this. So it's you're still included in a lot of aspects. Like, you have Cortez is technically an option. More on that in a minute. You have Cade and Alenka, who's my space boyfriend. And and you have characters like Sarah and Dorian and Josephine and Iron Bull and Zevran and Liliana from Origins and all these different romance options that are open to not just being heterosexual. And kind of back to the Steve Cortez, but I was kind of disappointed because he's, I don't know, he feels kind of tacked on almost, you know, like until the Citadel DLC especially. But even so, he's just kind of there, you know? And at the same time, I can't speak for all the LGBT community, but for me personally, I've seen enough of tragic gay characters. You know, they're sad, they do their thing, they mopey, you know, whatever. I've seen enough of that. So when Cortez came around, I was like, okay, gay character, yeah, I can romance him. And then, like, he's all mopey and sad about his dead husband, and while it's great that they show that, it's also kind of like, I've seen this a little too much. I don't need my tragic gay male character. I'm good.
Okay. Tim, did you have any thoughts on this before I kind of jump in?
Go for it.
You know, I agree with you that BioWare's done a great job with LGBT stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, let's not forget Krem.
Krem was awesome.
Yes, and I think Krem is an example of where if they reached out, because I know Patrick Weeks mentioned reaching out to people they knew to make sure he was doing the character correctly.
Mm-hmm.
I think they need to also do that for people of color.
That's true.
Because I'm going to throw my usual bone to pick about Mother Giselle and Vivienne. You know, Vivienne was one of the few, you know, in the party, undeniably black characters we've gotten. And she comes across in a lot of, you know, these ice queen, strong black woman tropes. But then, you know, she's also, you know, cuckolding an older white guy. And that's how she got her power. And there's historical precedent there.
Yeah.
So there's a historical precedent for that. And it's like, did you really have to go to that route? Like, why couldn't she be a romance option? Why couldn't she be not as standoffish and aloof?
I mean, I can see from a story standpoint why she's not a romance option. But having that kind of mirroring of black woman gains her power through marriage to white man in old, in days kind of thing.
True. Yeah, she was still definitely playing the politics game well before her entrance into Valrio.
You know, and then Mother Giselle, who actually had a chance to talk to David about this, David Gator, when I had him on the show, she gives off the over-religious black woman stereotype, or overly religious black person stereotype, and know that she's affiliated with the church reinforces that stereotype in the way that she treats Dorian, and, you know, and again, I know it's not intentional, but without that context, without that life experience, we're not going to someone and going, so I wrote this character, I want to be sure that I'm not screwing up and being unintentionally racist or something like that. If you can do that for one character, it seems like you could do it for others, or, you know, maybe diversify your writing staff. So, I mean, and this is nothing new. People have, you know, people saw me GX, seen my writing, know that this is nothing new. And I've told this to devs, so it's not like, oh, I'm having this moment to tell the devs what I think. So I think, you know, great grades for LGBTQ representation. Still need a lot of work for...
Still need some racial diversity in the party. Yes, definitely.
Definitely.
Though I will say it's probably, compared to like Origins and DA2, there's definitely more diversity in races. Yeah. If you look at Josephine, or Dorian technically isn't white, or Vivienne, and I wish there were more, but it is definitely an improvement. And I think they have a lot of room in the future to include more diversity and branch away from those stereotypical roles as well.
Oh, definitely. Inquisition made me very happy in that we get a black character in the party. There's black NPCs. It's not just, oh, the only brown people ever come from Antiva.
And they randomize it too, which I think is very nice. Like, NPCs, I'm not sure which if they do it in all situations, but I know in a lot that the NPC's hair color, skin tone, not so much what they wear or what their like face structure or bone structure are, but like their skin tone and their hair will also randomize, which I think is great.
Yeah, you know, and if they can do that for this game, hopefully we just see more of it in games to come.
Exactly. And I think one thing they were really happy with was in Frostbite, you can, the way that the engine's built with darker skin tones, you can really see skin features just as well as any other skin tone. Like you can see eyes pop just as well, or you can see lip shades just as well. So it's easier to be equally represented, which I think is great about the engine.
Oh yeah, I mean, I can actually make a dark skin character that I can see when there's no light.
Exactly. Like if you look at Mass Effect 3, if you romance Cortez, he's like a shadow.
Yeah, or even two, when you go to try to get, oh god, what's her name? Her daughter. Not Aria. I'm totally blanking out.
You mean Morinth?
Yes, thank you. If you have a darker shepherd in that scene before you go back in the club, you can't see your shepherd. And I've literally done this, and I'm like, huh. Well, I at least if I my character's eyes are open, I know they're there, but that's a little bit ridiculous.
I think kind of, I would say probably the worst instance, and they patched this, I believe. I'd have to go back and try it, but I remember seeing this on like Tumblr and Twitter. When Dragon Age 2 came out, when you change Hawk's skin tone, your sibling's skin tone and your mom's skin tone also changes to match that, but their body builds do not. Their body builds stay a very pale color. So if you make even just a tan hawk or a dark-skinned hawk, or there's even that weird pinkish-yellow color that I don't think many people... It's just looks a little unnatural almost. It's off. I don't know. I think they fixed that as well. But depending on your skin tone selection, it doesn't match with the body build. I think they went back and patched it. But I remember seeing that and being like, wow, that's something that should have been fixed.
Yeah, because I know I have some mods that address that with certain armors. It doesn't change.
It's bad that you have to have mods for that, though.
Yeah, well, I play BioWare games. I'm used to having to have mods for a lot of things. So before we get carried away too much, let's let Tim get into the next question.
Yes, Tim.
So if you wanted to highlight diversity in a BioWare title, what game or series would you bring up to really show where they're succeeding, where they might need to improve?
My first thought is Inquisition, but upon thinking for a further second, I really wonder what they're going to do with Andromeda, because with Mass Effect, they obviously got a lot of feedback, and with Inquisition, they obviously got a lot of feedback. So Andromeda, I would say that would be really interesting to watch and see what happens, just because they've further grown in experience as a staff and as writers and have gotten more feedback and more exposure to what they need to do in future games. So I'd say Andromeda is the one you need to watch, but I would say in terms of progress, Inquisition, but only because it's the most recent game. I mean, I feel with each new title, it will only get more diverse.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
They definitely do seem to respond to feedback very well between games.
Definitely. Yeah. Unlike certain companies Ubisoft, that take forever to include another gender as a protagonist.
Yeah, well, you know, Ubisoft and their whole, oh, we can't animate women is a big reason I need diverse games has
You can't
exist.
Animate women?
That was one of the things that they said. Oh, it's too hard to animate women. I'm sorry.
Wow.
And this is after, you know, the game with Eveline Grandpere.
Wow.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
So I think they learned, and they're also taking a year off from the Assassin's Creed franchise, which makes me happy because I'd rather have a good game than a rushed game.
Though I will say with Syndicate, I had a grand old time finally playing as a female protagonist. You switched between, so it was about half and half, and sometimes you got to choose which one. So it was really nice having the option to play both genders.
Yes.
I kind of groaned whenever I had to play Jacob, though.
Really?
Eevee, in terms of, like, my playstyle, I loved playing Eevee because I liked to, like, be sneaky and do daggers and, like, no one knows I'm here, but everyone is dead. So I really liked Eevee's kind of sneaky style. Though, in some occasions, I also really liked Jacob's style. I had him with, like, the knuckles, so he'd just punch people and, like, grab him by the nostrils and just pull him to the ground. It was great. It was great.
I think it was more, I appreciated Eevee's story more. You know, I was kind of rolling my eyes with Jacob's attempts to do whatever he was doing.
He did tend to mess things up quite a bit.
Huh. Well, you know, since we're talking about Assassin's Creed really quickly, there was actually a really good article on Ramesh.com about Jacob and how he is apparently either bisexual or queer.
Really?
Yes.
This makes me, like, 10 times more interested in the game. Go on.
because, you know, like, the, you know that whole scene whenever you kill someone and they do the dab at the neck to get the blood? Apparently, what the person he, in his story in Scene 8, however they describe it in the game, because I haven't got that far, there's very much an attraction that you can sense, and a lot of people read that as queer baiting, but apparently one of the devs was like, oh no, this is intentional. So someone,
which one was that? Because I think
that's Steric, I think.
Yes.
That's the final Templar.
Yes, oh. Steric. You know, there's very much an affection and attraction slash boyish crush, and when you do kill Steric, he reaches up and kisses Jacob.
I remember
Steric's gang provider.
Okay.
It's been so long since I've played Syndicate, so I'm trying to remember. I think I remember that, but I didn't read that much into it. Just because I knew I was playing an Ubisoft game almost, so just kind of like putting this filter of don't read into it. But now I will. So
yeah, I will find that and send it and include it in the show notes, because I thought it was interesting, because I'm still kind of meh on Jacob. But that, one, it really gave me new insight and like, huh, that's kind of interesting that they subverted this very, you know, stereotypically macho dude that's very much a pugilist that is, you know, I'm going to get everything by brute force, and that you see this kind of tenderness and boyish affection for another man out of him.
Now, I don't want to spoil that scene for you, because that was a really cool death.
Ramesh article totally spoils it, so.
But that particular sequence, I will say, is a good turning point for Jacob's story arc. You kind of see him actually starting to realize his actions are having consequences, and he starts to care a lot more.
Oh, okay. Yeah, because I think that's why I'm kind of meh on Jacob, because he just seems like, yeah, I'm going to get mine, fuck y'all.
Yeah.
So I will make sure I put that in the show notes, because I thought it was really interesting, and it made me sit up and kind of take notice more, and I'm glad it wasn't played for queer baiting.
Yeah, I remember the kiss. I played through that scene like 4 days ago. it didn't strike me at the time. You know, Jacob was more surprised than anything. He certainly wasn't revulsed, so they didn't play it as that kind of shocking kiss, but it surprised him. But yeah, it was an interesting touch for them to add.
I think it was the in the dev interview, they said it was supposed to be read more like, shit, you had the same affection for me, and now it's too late.
I can see that.
It's kind of like a we could have had it all moment in that split second as a guy is dying, which, you know, has to kind of rock his world a little bit. It's like if things had just turned out differently, where could this have gone?
It feels kind of like a little too subtle to me, because I didn't get that at all. Now I'm going to have to go replay it.
At least go back and replay that section and be like, definitely. Oh, this is where this is.
And one thing I'd like to point out is actually Jacob's voice actor, Paul, I have no idea how to pronounce his last name. I think like Amos. He actually is on a show that I watch that's probably one of the most pro-bisexual mainstream TV shows I have ever seen. It's awesome. It's called Lost Girl. Like, the main character is bisexual. He's bisexual now in this season. Like, it is very, very, very diverse in sexualities.
Huh. I may have to check it out. I wasn't too interested in it based on trailers, but, you know, if there's good bi representation, I'll give it a shot.
Definitely. There's gay characters, there's straight characters, there's a ton of bisexual characters, there's a ton of sexual fluidity. It is great.
Cool. Well, we touched on this a little bit earlier, but I was wondering if there's anything else you can think of that could be done better diversity-wise in our favorite BioWare titles?
Diversity-wise, I would like to see a trans character on our squad. And I like that Krem had a very enjoyable personality, and I think they can, with all trans people with varying personalities, there's no stereotypical trans personality, so there's, I guess, less room for them to screw up, maybe? But I think what they did with Krem is, everyone loved Krem, because Krem was wonderfully done, and very, very cool to talk to, and I feel that maybe they were testing the waters to see kind of, okay, this is our best attempt. Let's see how people view it as, did we do a good job? Did we represent a trans person accurately? And did we offend anyone? And I think the overall feedback was Krem is great. Now, because I know in Dragon Age 2 with Serendipity was supposed to be a drag queen, but due to setbacks with the engine, a lot of people thought that Serendipity was transgender. And because they represented Serendipity in very not the greatest way as sort of a prostitute. So I think they were kind of trying to be very sensitive moving forward. And I really want to see in the next Dragon Age, I would love to see Mei, because Mei is awesome.
Yes.
And Mei is just so cool. I'd love to see Mei as a companion. I'd love to see more varying skin tones. I'd love to see more sexual diversity. But, I mean, with what we have now, I think it's not bad. I mean, it's not amazing, but it's something. It's more than nothing, definitely. So I think there's room for improvement in every area, but at the same time, it's not bad. So
yeah, I'm just thinking out loud. Like, for me, I mean, I just know that if there was, if Thetis was a little browner, and I'm not talking about the mud in Ferelden, we could, you know, have a bit more variety, and then that one black character cannot be the one, quote unquote, and have to bear the burden.
I would like to not have a token anything character, you know? Be nice.
Yeah. Well, I don't think Vivian was a token per se, but, you know, she had all the, she had the digital expect, she had the expectations of fandom on her digital shoulders.
Mm-hmm.
If that makes sense. It's like, yay, we get a black character, and damn it.
She was your, she was the primary representation.
Exactly. So yeah, that's kind of my, that's always going to be the thought I come back to when it comes to diverse, discussing diversity in my favorite franchise of games.
I'd definitely love to see them geographically diverse, you know, actually travel more than just one region.
I want to go to Tevinter.
Yes.
We're going. I mean, is that even a question? Like, we stabbed it with a knife. I'm pretty sure we're going. They've been teasing it for 3 games. We're going. What I really want to know is, like, you know how on the map in Tevinter, there's a town called Solus? Or a city called Solus? Or I don't, it's just a dot with Solus next to it. I don't know if it's where Solus actually is. I don't know. But I want to know what that is.
Hopefully it won't take 5 years to find out.
Yep.
So, what's next for you?
For me, what can I talk about? Oh boy. I have lots of plans for things. Lots of things I can't talk about, but things. And, you will see me on my channel a lot and places that aren't my channel. And I'll be around places. I'll be doing interviews with more voice actors and developers and, you know, doing my thing, doing the good old BioWare thing. There's lots of stuff that I would love to tell you, but I can't. But just know that you're in store for some good stuff.
The power of NDA compels you.
The power of NDA is very, I'm very strong with the NDA, yes.
I can understand that feeling. Are you going to PAX South?
I am going to PAX South. My suitcase is not packed, but that's because I only live like an hour away. So I am very excited. I'm going up Friday after class and then coming back Sunday. And I've got some plans with some peoples. And there's a BioWare hangout and Mike Laidlaw's there. So I'm definitely going there.
I'm so and sad. I wish
I made a t-shirt actually with my logo on it. So I'm going to wear that. It's going to be fun.
Okay, so you have to totally say hi to Mike Laidlaw, and he's probably like, who is this weirdo? Why is she sending greetings from Chicago? But I'm always, like, in his stream, and he's not going to GDC, so it's not like I'm going to randomly run into the man somewhere.
You never know. He's just walking down the street, and boom, Laidlaw.
That would be hilarious and a little weird if he just suddenly showed up in Chicago.
I mean, you never know.
Oh, I know. It's just, I really wanted to... Okay, I feel a way about PAX in general, but I also didn't plan on PAX South because if I still have my day job, there's no way I could have taken the time off / money. And now it's more just like money, and I waited way too late, so.
This is my first PAX. I've never been to one before, mainly because they're very far away from Texas, except for now that they have PAX South. So I'm so excited.
Yeah, there's a slim chance I'll be at PAX East, if only if I am on panels, because I was invited to be on a couple panels.
That's awesome.
Yeah, so, you know, if it happens, it happens, but I've already got a few conventions in the hopper, and GDC is going to be probably the longest week of my life, but it'll be amazing. So, speaking of meet and greet and talking to other folks, we actually got some questions for you.
Oh.
Yes. And, you know, it makes me happy because a lot of them are names that I recognize. So I'll take a couple, and then Tim, if you want to take the last three, including your own question.
This will be fun. Okay.
So for once, you get to ask the question yourself.
Yay!
He gets to ask his own question to me.
Well, it's funny because every episode we usually have one or two or more questions from Tim, and I'm like, he's actually here, he can just ask himself.
He's good at questions.
Yes. So our friend Mama Nita, I don't actually know Mama Nita's real name, and not that we need to use government names on the show. Her question is, well, first, hi, BB.
And then, hi.
And then, did you ever imagine when you first started your channel that you'd be where you are now, and also hugs an asterisk?
Aw, hugs back. When I very first started my channel, I had no idea what was going on. But I always kind of saw myself at this point once I really got into it. I mean, I've been told by other YouTubers that I'm growing at a pretty good rate. Mm-hmm. So I'm never too surprised, I guess I would say. But when people are like, oh, you're so big, I'm like, am I? Really? Thank you. Really? So, I mean, I see myself getting definitely bigger, but it is it's nice because developers know of me, voice actors know of me, a lot of the fandom knows of me. Like, it's interesting whenever I go to, I would say, a new cluster of the BioWare fandom.
Mm-hmm.
There's many clusters. There's a big ones, small ones, whatnot, on who knows me and who doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
And it's usually either, oh my god, BioFan, you're awesome, or who are you? So it's kind of, there's never really any gray area, but usually not long after I find a cluster, they all know of me, and just, I guess I'm just making my way through.
Cool. And then one of my absolute favorite fellow BioWare fans, because Pringtella is like just such a joy to watch.
I love Pringtella. She's so positive and energetic, and it's just great.
Well, yeah, and it's just like watching her stream / watching her Twitter feed is just, it's like, you are so cute. I want to keep you and put you in my pocket and let fandom, the dark corners of fandom, never touch you.
Yes. Protect the precious gem.
Yes, she's a cinnamon roll too good for this world. And she says, I have a question, all in caps. Do you like cheese? And have you heard of our mighty savior cheese wheel?
Who doesn't like cheese? I love cheese. Like, if you put cheese on anything, I'll immediately like it. If it doesn't have cheese on it, it's questionable. But I definitely have heard of the mighty savior cheese wheel. I regularly worship said mighty savior cheese wheel. And whenever I see the mighty savior cheese wheel in various corners of Thetis, I immediately am excited.
Did you get the cheese shield?
I did. And it is a great shield also for stats-wise, and is a very good shield for comedic value. I just wish, like, I feel like if any of our companions would actually use it, it'd probably be Sarah, but she's a rogue, so she doesn't use it. So I feel like it's kind of like, who do I put it with? Like, I mean, maybe Iron Bull, but I like to have him as a two-hander. Cassandra, I think she'd find that a bit odd. Blackwall, maybe. Maybe. Okay, let's give it to Blackwall.
Hey, he's a warden.
He is now in my playthrough. He's I always send him off to become an actual Grey Warden. You know, fix that right there.
Yeah. Okay, this is a meta thing, and it bugs me to no end. And Tim, tell me if you have discovered this as well. If your warden contact comes back to Skyhold, especially someone who's been a warden as long as, you know, as Stroud or Loghain or Alistair, and you're supposed to have this, you know, additional sense because that's how you tell Darkspawn and other wardens are around, how did he get away with the lie for so much of the fucking game?
I just imagine him hiding out in the barn the whole time.
Yeah, I feel like he's like,
there's an actual Grey Warden here. I'll just, there's this nice large bale of hay. Let me crouch behind it until they're gone.
See the horses right now.
Like, what's the AOE on your warden senses? You know, actually, we should just, like, tweet at someone and go, so, what is the actual range? If I'm a warden and someone else is a warden, how far away can we be before we can't sense each other? Because this is going to bug me to know.
It's like a cell phone signal.
It's like, okay, there's no darkspawn. Someone somewhere, especially if he's in the party, I can see if you're in Skyhold, it's a giant fortress.
There's other wardens around, usually. I could see there being, you know, some invisibility.
You know, but like when you go to Adamant, there's wardens everywhere. And the minute he starts talking, they should all just look at him and go, who the fuck are you? You are not a warden.
I mean, or like that's... he even says, like, you know my name. And I feel like at least one of them should be like, dude, you're not Blackwall. You know?
Like somebody awesome. Ought to like... you know, bust his cover, because, you know, even if your one warden contact doesn't get it, let's give them the benefit of the doubt and say they are preoccupied with everything that's going on, demons falling out of the sky, cats and dogs sleeping together, etc.
Or you could also maybe say that the original Blackwall had some uncanny resemblance to Tom Rainier, maybe, you know.
True.
Maybe he walks around with darkspawn blood smeared on his armor.
Yeah, he just, you know, I mean... You know, it's like his cologne. You know, he just adds a few drops of the taint in there and just...
See, you have to ask Mike Laidlaw this when you meet him. Tell him that is my question. Like, okay, Cypher hangs out in your streams. This is her question. She couldn't be here. I need to know the answer to this.
Does he put darkspawn blood in his cologne? Or, like, how does it work?
Like, how does he fool everyone, especially when there's another warden around? But I digress, because we will be here all night talking about meta plot holes. And trust me, I could probably find at least 5 more flaws where I'm like, I know narratively there's probably a reason that this slips by.
They can work their way. The writing staff is very good at, if there's a plot hole that then everybody finds out about... In the future, there will no longer be said plot hole. Like, for example, killing Liliana has been fully resolved.
Yeah, she just came back. She's better now.
She's a lyrium thing and something.
Sure. Or is that actually what happens? Because I never beat Descent. The rock thing keeps beating me.
Well, she, it's a little vague, but she's like, so if she died in Origins, in the end of Trespasser... She'll, like, leave a note, and it talks about the song, and she turns into dust, and it's kind of like, ooh, weird, what is this?
But what if she's the divine?
If she's the divine, then she will not. Then she'll be the divine. If she's not the divine, and she died in Origins, then she'll turn into lyrium dust.
Then what about Trespasser?
It's at the end of Trespasser.
Oh, okay.
It's an epilogue.
Oh, see, I don't think any of my playthroughs I had her die. I never really... She may have annoyed me in Origins a bit, but I never had a playthrough where she died.
I always like to play as a evil, or I guess an Inquisition, like, Assquisitor in one playthrough. So in, like, after my, like, evil playthroughs, of course, like, given the chance to kill any companion, you know. So from the save from my evil playthrough, she... eventually becomes lyrium dust, and it's weird, and I want more explanation.
Yeah. Well, between, or, you know, what's really, would be really, really wrong? The ending where Cullen is a lyrium addict, and he snorts
lyrium. I can't, nope.
And then his eyes just start to glow like Anders.
Nope.
Oh, that would be amazing.
Nope.
I think I broke you.
All the nopes. Nope.
You heard it here first. I broke Biofan with my own thought. Oh my god. That, I'm just like, now I kind of want to write that fic. This would be terrible. It would be tragic, but I'd still fucking write it. Oh my god. I'm going to write that down before I go to sleep, because I didn't know that's what happened to her. I've had the, you know, Cullen is Illyrium at it again, but I did not know she basically turns to Illyrium dust. He's desperate. Come on now. He's like in the street in rags. He might do anything for a hit.
No. You never know. No. No snorting of Liliana, please.
I just won't tell you when I write it.
Shh. But,
okay. Before we get... Before I break Biofan any further, Tim, do you want to get in the
I'm pretty sure that's Iron Bull's job, but it's okay.
Oh, yeah. So, Skyrim Lover 29 asks, okay, how are you so awesome?
That's a good question. I ate my vegetables. I guess, you know, I mean, how are you awesome? I'm going to throw that back at you. How are you so awesome?
You got an answer to him.
It's all in the magic of the guitar.
Okay.
I have no awesomeness outside of my guitar.
Well, then.
All right. Carolyn Velociraptor, who goes by Arumi_Kai on Twitter, asks, what's your theory about the origin of the Blight? Do you think Andruil brought it back from the Void?
You know, before Solas decided to just go and just shake up everything we knew about the Fade and just totally just ruin every theory that I ever had about that magical Fadey place, I thought, you know, it had something to do with the Magisters. I mean, obviously, if you look at Corypheus and the Architect, they got some weird stuff going on, and they look sort of similar. Now I'm not too sure. I would say it definitely... I mean, there's proof that Tevinter had something to do with the Blight. I have no idea what the Black City is anymore. Solas just took this beautiful amount of, like, curiosity that I had and just threw it in the blender. It's just gone. I have no idea. I would say that... being that the Fade once was part of our actual Fadus real world, I say, with making quotation marks with my fingers, the Black City probably would have existed in the, quote, real world. So I assume it's probably something elven. I don't know anything other than that.
Okay, interesting. That can be another question you get to ask Mike if you have enough time.
So what's this deal with the Black City, Mike? I'm sure he'll just be like, so the Spoilers. Thing is... Like, I'm sure he'll just be like, ready to tell me. No. No.
Or he'll give his usual answer. Spoiler!
Hey, at least it's an answer.
All right, our last question comes from some rando named Thane1982.
Who is that guy?
I have no idea. He sends in questions like every week, I swear.
Yeah. Who is this dude?
If you could see any BioWare franchise resurrected, which one would it be and why? So, of course, I'm kind of excluding ones that are currently alive.
Well, so the thing is, EA has said that they are not that big on, like, remasters. In terms of, like, taking an old game that's ended and then making, like, a sequel to that, I think Jade Empire would be great. I would love to see, like, a Mass Effect remastered or a Dragon Age Origins remastered. Now, that would be cool. I tried to get, like, a campaign started for Dragon Age Origins remastered, but then that EA thing came out, and I was like, well, shut. So, yeah. I'm gonna go with Jade Empire. I would like to see, like, not necessarily a Jade Empire 2. I feel like they would do, like, a Jade Empire colon some word after that kind of title, like Mass Effect Andromeda or, like, Dragon Age Inquisition. Like, I feel like going, like, that route to get it more kind of standalone. So I'd like to see, you know, because Jade Empire was a great game, and it originally came out on, like, original Xbox. So it's been a while, I would say. So I feel like it would be a cool game to bring back.
I still own my original Xbox copy.
Wow.
That's hardcore.
I know, right?
I don't have a console that can play it anymore, but I do still own my copy.
You can... I think it's still free on Origins. They put it up for free, so a lot of people have it now.
Yeah, I got it off Origin as well, but I got the special edition when it first came out on Xbox, so...
So last year I was studying abroad in Scotland, and, like, I brought my Xbox there. Just this shows you just how much I am addicted to gaming. I brought an Xbox 5,000 miles overseas, and then brought that same Xbox back over to the US. And, like, I had packed it in, like, a good, like, 5 layers of bubble wrap and even put, like, coats around it. Like, this thing was not going to get damaged. You could, like, throw it across the room. It was going to be fine. It was safe. And then I get home, I plug it in, I play Inquisition for maybe 20 minutes, and it catches on fire.
Oh, no.
Wow. That's not where I expected that story to go.
And let me tell you how great warranties are. They are really great because I got a brand new Xbox One and it works great. No fire.
Wow.
Yet.
Wow. Fire's not the way I expected that story to go. Okay, then. Well, speaking of gaming and being hardcore and into our games, we usually wrap up the show with what we're playing slash reading, if, you know, if there's anything that's really caught our eye on the bookshelf. And since you are a guest, please feel free to go first.
So I have, for the past month, been living in a place called the Commonwealth in Fallout 4. I've very rarely left. I was like, okay, I've never played a Fallout game before. Everyone tells me this is great shit. So I was like, okay, you know, maybe I'll just follow the main story and just see how it goes. And I finished the main story at exactly 111 hours, which I think I deserve some kind of medal or something for that irony. And it is very entertaining. I'm choosing to kind of, you know, just not focus on the heteronormatives of the plot. But it, aside from that, it is a wonderful game that does allow you to have a romance with any gender on any romance option, which kind of makes up for that. I've also played Assassin's Creed Syndicate recently, which I thought was great. I got really bored of Assassin's Creed after Ezio was no longer in them, and then this game was great and kind of like a revival of the series. Obviously, I've been playing Dragon Age Inquisition, especially Trespasser. I have 13 Inquisitors, so I have a lot of hours logged into Inquisition, and still more to go. And then just for fun, I'm also playing Viva Pinata.
Oh my god, that's not a title I've heard in many years.
Rare put out, so you know about Xbox One's backwards compatibility thing that they're doing now?
Uh-huh.
The Rare company that did, like, Banjo-Tatooie or whatever, and all sorts of classic 360 games, including Viva Pinata, put out this thing called Rare Replay that has all these old school Rare games, like several titles, all on one purchase. So I got Rare Replay and I'm like, Viva Pinata! And I've logged some good hours into Viva Pinata. It is still fun and still holds up.
One of the streamers I watch, Dylan 8-Bit Homo, that is actually his channel name and his Twitter name. Was streaming yesterday, and they pulled out the Rare Replay, and of all the things they picked that would be fun, emphasis on the word fun here, they picked Battletoads. And I was like, I'm going to go get a drink for you, because playing this game stressed me out.
Like, Fallout 4 stressed me out at times.
Okay, but Battletoads is like, you have a life, and your life is measured in little hearts. You know, you're...
Oh, that old school game where we actually used to use hearts for health points.
Yes, I have to remember that I'm literally twice your age.
This was NES, so...
Right, I'm like, oh my god.
I tend to have that effect on people.
Well, it's just like, as I'm explaining this, I'm like, wait, some of this is not quite before you were born, but you would have been too little to play these games.
If it's post Elmo's ABCs, then I think you're okay.
Okay. It may be before, I'm not sure. I have to look up the original.
It definitely was before. Game Boy Color was Super Nintendo era.
Okay. Yeah, so Battletoads is one of those games where it's like, okay, you thought Dark Souls was hard?
I played Dark Souls for like 2 minutes, and I was like, nope, done.
Yeah, so if people that want to go, I'm so hardcore, I play Dark Souls, I'm like, you sit down with Battletoads, and the original Contra, and then we can talk.
At least Contra had the Konami code.
Right, but what if you couldn't do the Konami code?
Then you were hardcore.
Right, or you played it in the arcade.
Then you were broke.
Yeah.
I remember arcades, the good old days.
Yeah, I still got an arcade token or two somewhere in a box, but, you know, I always just want to kind of scoff at people, go, oh, you're not hardcore, you don't play like Dark Souls or whatever the fuck it is, or Bloodborne. And I'm like, yeah, okay, dude, I grew up in the era of Battletoads and Contra and the Konami code, so fuck you.
I was playing Pokemon.
Yeah, I heart my Pokemon. I'm not good at it, but it's a fun game.
I love Pokemon. They now have it where you can customize your character and change your skin tone, so that's awesome.
Yay. Tim, as my illustrious guest co-host, you can go next.
All right, well, I too am playing Assassin's Creed Syndicate. Woo. I finished the main storyline just a couple days ago, so I'm on to the Jack the Ripper DLC now.
I haven't played that yet. Is it good?
Holy crap, it's amazing.
Okay, I need to get that on then.
Yeah, it's focused on Evie, like 20 years later. So she's kind of grown up from where she was in the main storyline. And it focuses a lot more on, like, and this is something that the Batman franchise almost did, but then decided not to. There's a fear mechanic in the fights now. So you can actually, depending on how brutally you fight, you can make your enemies fear you, which can immobilize them or even send them running away.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a really cool addition to the combat mechanic, which was already really tight in Syndicate. But yeah, I'm really loving that right now. And also, of course, occasionally gaming with my daughter. She's 3, so we play Peggle together, and aww, we play Castle Crushers. Which, she's surprisingly good at Castle Crushers. She she can't really handle the more advanced fights, but she can run around and she can wail on the enemies.
That's so cool.
And then I just finished reading Daniel Older's Midnight Taxi Tango the other day, which is incredible. And I'm about to start The Between by Tanana Reeve-Dew, because everything I've read of her so far has been incredible, and my library had it to special order, and so I'm looking forward to getting into that.
Let me know what you think, because I actually wrote a review for that for Cascadia Subduction.
Oh, how did you like it?
I loved it. I thought it was very well done. All the stories wove together incredibly well, and it was creepy in that it sneaks up on you way, not in the, you know, gore, you know, jump scare kind of way in books, but it...
She's awesome at that.
And I'm just like, I'm reading this. Holy shit, this is creepy.
The Good House was amazing.
I've not read The Good House. That's on my list of things to get. I'm hoping that she'll be at WizCon. I don't know if she usually goes to WizCon, but...
Yeah, she actually talked to me a little bit on Twitter, because I was kind of live tweeting my read of The Good House.
Oh, nice.
And I actually have... from my fundamentalist Christian days, an experience with a dude who thought he was demon-possessed.
Oh.
I'm sure he's great at parties.
I was the one who exorcised him because we were all alone in a dark church at night.
Oh, dear. But now I need to hear the story.
I'm going to sleep great tonight.
One of the things that she describes with the people suffering from the... it's not quite a demonic possession in The Good House, but it's that same kind of influence and possession of evil. One of the things she describes is this intense stomach ache, which is something I've never heard in any, like, The Exorcist style story or any of the ones based on, like, the Amityville Horror charlatan people.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it was something that when I experienced that night, every time the quote unquote demon or whatever it was came over him, the dude doubled over as if he had just been, you know, punched by a 3-ton truck right in the gut. And crumpled to the ground. He ran dry retching to the bathroom at one point. I actually have myself narrating this on my SoundCloud.
Oh, dear.
If you ever want to hear the story, the full story. But it was interesting. I had some interesting experiences when I was a Southern Christian.
Oh, dear. Yeah, you'll have to send that to me one of these days. And I'll make sure that I listen to it early enough in the day that I'm not freaked out. And I guess I'll go last. I'm kind of boring. I've been playing Fallout 4, not very well. I keep restarting because I suck at it.
Have you put the difficulty to easy? Because I needed to do that.
Oh, yeah. I have no shame. I was playing on easy to begin with, and there's just...
very easy players. What's up?
I look, I want to enjoy the game, not be frustrated by it. But there's just certain missions where it's like, I don't know if I just approach it wrong or if I'm just not really feeling playing at that moment. But after so many times, I'm just like, you know what? Fuck this. I'll come back to it later.
What level are you?
Oh, God. On the game I started soon after release, I'm probably like level 10, but I'm not quite sure how leveling works. Just like, oh, hey, you leveled. And I'm like, okay, I guess I did stuff.
I would recommend building stuff, because then you get experience with that. Because I'm like level 46.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And I did a lot. I basically turned Sanctuary into an impenetrable, gorgeous fortress of wonderfulness.
Huh. I did not realize you got experience for building. I thought it was just like, oh, we added crafting. Here, you can go do it.
I would say at least probably like 100 of my 111 hours was spent crafting.
Okay. That's fair. It's what I do. I do a lot more crafting in Inquisition than I have in other games. And, you know, also blame Mike Laidlaw for the fact that I picked up Dragon's Dogma, the PC remaster. Just started that yesterday on stream, and it's fun. I got much further, and I'm kind of like, there's always dragons and bears. Why are there always bears?
Lions and tigers and bears. Oh my!
Basically, I'm just like, every fantasy game has a bear somewhere. I'm like, how are there always bears no matter where you go in these fucking worlds?
I love that one part of the Hinterlands. It's that one camp in, what's-his-face's woods. And, like, kind of the western, southwest of...
Like Hafter's Woods or something?
Hafter's Woods, yeah. And I love that spot in Hafter's Woods where, before you make the camp, it's just, like, bear-a-palooza. Like, there's a bear, there's another bear. It's a congregation of bears. They're everywhere.
Yeah, and it feels like when Dorian's in the party, there's always more bears somehow. And I'm like, there's some subversive joke there.
That's funny.
Well, it's true. And I think it happened on stream one day where I'm like, I didn't have Dorian in the party and there was a bear. I came back with Dorian in the party. Suddenly bears everywhere. There's a joke somebody did with scripting to have more bears when Dorian shows up.
Now I've got to actually try that.
Oh, it's hilarious.
I love how Dorian is the only companion that actually points out, like... A scorching desert or, like, frozen tundra. Let's bring Dorian.
I just love that he comments on the giant fucking spiders. He's like...
Now I feel for those that have a thing with the spiders. I myself do not mind the giant spiders. However, there are a lot of said giant spiders.
There are. And the first Dragon Age, like, made my arachnophobia much worse.
There was a mod for Dragon Age 2 on PC to turn all of the giant spiders into my bar. I'm like, I don't want to kill the puppies.
God, no, I'd much rather kill spiders.
Yeah, I'm like, I don't want to kill the puppies.
No, I already feel bad enough at that one part in Origin when you're sneaking into Fort Dracon.
Yeah.
And of course, Inquisition actually was just playing and streaming it this morning because I decided to roll a Canary, or a Talbashoth more appropriately, to Romance Dorian. And see, I feel like I played something else, and I'm just totally leaving it off the list, because I'm that kind of tired today.
Can I segue into my feelings about Dorian? Because I have some feelings.
Okay, well, we can end with your feelings on Dorian before we tell people where to find you online.
Okay, so my feelings on Dorian. At first, I thought he was great, he's hilarious, he's awesome. But he just does not really want to, you know, commit. And, like, I was kind of like, okay, the romance at the end of it, I was like, okay, I would like some, like, firm, like, commitment here. Like, you're going off to Javinter, but, oh, I can't come with you. Okay, fine. And then when Trespasser was announced, I was like, finally. And then I show up, there's Dorian, and he refers to me as his friend. I sighed, which for BioFan is equivalent to throwing things.
Okay, then. I was just kind of like...
And then I got a magical Skype crystal, and I'm still not really into Venter. So, yeah, there's that. But otherwise, he's a great character. Love him a lot.
But. Well, the whole thing with his father being killed... And needing to go back just seemed like a rather inconvenient plot point. Because my first Inquisitor that I did Trespasser with did romance him. And I'm like, that's some bullshit. I'm going to Sorrento with you. Fuck the Inquisition. I'm done. Well, it's just like, okay, look, you have cost me everything, including an arm. Fuck the Inquisition. I'm out. I'm going to Deventer. I don't care that I'm an elf. I'm going to go there and retire. Y'all can do what you want.
Like, if he is with Iron Bull and not you, like, they still see each other, versus if he's with the Inquisitor, you are, quote, occasionally seen on the streets of Minrathos.
Yeah, someone did a really good fan art that was kind of heartbreaking, because, like, it seems like the Inquisitor's breaking up with Dorian, and then they just walk in the door. They're like, nah, I'm tired of this. I'm just staying in Deventer.
Why won't you love me?
Well, Dorian, I think Dorian has commitment issues, but, you know, given his backstory, can you blame him?
That's true. He did have a tough upbringing.
Yeah, well, tough being relative to living in a life of luxury, just, you know, his father kind of wanted to do that whole blood magic thing to him. Nothing major.
Yeah, just, you know, typical Deventer family values.
So, you know, as we wrap up, Biofan, please tell everyone where to find you online.
So I am on Twitter at BioFanOfficial. I am on Tumblr at biofanblog.tumblr.com. I am on Facebook at facebook.com/BioFanOfficial. And I'm also on YouTube. You can click, I assume there's going to be like links and stuff around, yes, where you're listening to this podcast. So you can click those wonderful links and follow me and say hi, and I'll say hi back.
Yay. And Tim, thank you so, so much for jumping in to be our co-host this evening.
Woo!
Oh, I was really thrilled to. Thank you so much for asking me.
Oh, you're very welcome. So where can folks find you online?
Well, on Twitter at Thain1982. That's Thain1982. I'm kind of on Tumblr at Thain1982.tumblr.com. Not really, but kind of. Every now and then when I have something really long I want to say. I'm on SoundCloud at soundcloud.com/Thain1982.
Awesome. I'm sure people listening to this know they can find me as Cypher of Tyr mostly everywhere, except hit... So yeah, Cypher of Tyr, and on the rare occasion you look for me on Xbox Live, it is Cypher Sama, because at the time Cypher of Tyr was not available, and I'm too cheap to spend $10 to change it back to Cypher of Tyr. That is pretty much it, unless either of you have any parting words.
Thank you for listening.
Oh, thank you.
Yes, thank you so much.
It's been great being on here.
Awesome. I'm very glad you had a good time with us.
Definitely.
And, yeah. And, you know, you're always welcome to come back.
Aw, thank you. I will definitely hit you up on that.
Yay. And this is a wrap for this episode. And next week, we'll be talking to Holly Brockwell of Gadget. Is a lovely entrepreneur and woman doing a lot of things for women in the tech space and gaming. And also was Woman of the Year in 2015, so we'll be very happy to speak with her next time around. So, see you all in a week. Bye.
Bye.
Adios. ¶¶